Doug.
There's nowhere I wouldn't go to help someone customize and save on car insurance with Liberty Mutual, even if it means sitting front row at a comedy show.
Hey, everyone, check out this guy and his bird. What is this, your first date?
Oh, no. We help people customize and save on car insurance with Liberty Mutual together. We're married. Ah! Me to a human, him to a bird.
Yeah, the bird looks out of your league anyways.
Get a quote at libertymutual.com or with your local agent.
Liberty, 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 liberty.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
On February 8, 2005, 43-year-old Dr. Geeta Angara went to work at the water treatment facility in Totowa, New Jersey, where she'd worked as a senior chemist. She was last seen heading toward the plant's basement to complete a routine task. But Geeta was never seen again, and hours after her shift ended, her car was still in the employee lot and her coat was at her desk. No one could explain where she had gone. After an extensive search, her body was eventually found inside one of the facility's massive water tanks. Investigators determined that she had been assaulted and then drowned. More than 20 years later, no one has ever been charged, and the investigators are still searching for her killer. Hey everyone, welcome back to Detective Perspective. My name is Derek Levasseur. I'm a licensed private investigator and former police detective. Each week I'll be covering an unsolved case in story format. I'll then give you my perspective on the investigation and provide contact information for the individuals or organizations connected to the case so that if you have any tips, you can contact them directly and maybe you can help solve a case. So if you're someone who's interested in true crime, specifically unsolved cases, and you would like to hear my opinion on those investigations, please consider subscribing, whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever platform you use. So Geeta's case tonight is going to be an interesting one. And just for the record, Geeta did not like to be called Dr. Angara, so I'm going to refer to her as Geeta as well because that's what she liked to be referred to as. So we're going to respect that. This case on the surface, and I put up a post on social media before I started recording, you would think based on the controlled environment that this crime occurred in, that it would have been solved almost immediately. Because unlike many of the cases that we cover here, there is a relatively small suspect pool. And there are some methods that can be utilized to shrink down that pool even further. And yet, here we are, talking about this case, and there's even people out there who don't believe that it's a crime at all. Rather, it's a tragic accident. And we're going to talk about that as well, because I know a lot of people don't agree with that sentiment, but there is parts of it that I think we should at least entertain. And speaking of entertaining outside the box theories, I have one that even with all the research that I did on this case, I was talking to Haley about it earlier. I have not seen anyone anywhere mention this theory as a possibility, and I'm actually surprised by it. I'm going to talk about it at the end of the episode during the perspective, and I'm really interested to hear what you guys have to say because I almost feel like there's going to be one of you out there who's also going to think this before the end of this episode. Don't cheat. If you're one of them, comment down below as the episode's going on, if you're watching on YouTube, and put the theory out there and see if you were right. We have a lot to cover, so let's dive into this week's case. Geeta Angara was born in 1961 in Southeast India. Her loved ones described her as a beautiful person with a lot of energy, an infectious smile, and an engaging personality. She was known for striving for the best in all aspects of her personal and professional life, and she took education very seriously. Geeta earned several master's degrees in India before moving to New York. Yes, I said several master's degrees. Several. Okay, that's who we're talking about here. And she later earned a doctorate in organic chemistry at New York University in the early 1990s. So, in case you haven't put it together yet, Geeta was extremely smart, smarter than most of us. After graduating NYU, she went to work at the Passaic Valley Water Commission in Totowa, New Jersey. The Star Ledger described the commission as an enormous industrial complex that provides drinking water to more than 800,000 people in northern New Jersey communities. Geeta's job was to ensure the water was clean and safe. At the commission, Geeta didn't brag about having a PhD, and she asked people to call her Geeta, not Dr. Angara. She was also known for being very friendly, and while she didn't socialize much outside of work, she did have a close group of friends that she spent time with. Now, the reason she didn't spend much time socializing outside of work was because Geeta lived 45 minutes away from Totowa in Homedale with her husband Jaya, who was a banker, and their three children, two daughters, and one son. According to everyone who knew her, Geeta's family was her life, and she and her husband had a very loving relationship. As the years passed, Geeta continued working at the Water Commission. She spent her days compiling her findings into papers and working to improve processes within the facility. In 2004, she was promoted to senior chemist and was tasked with overseeing the plant's transformation into a cutting-edge facility. The goal was to eventually stop using chlorine treatments and transition to an ozone disinfection system. Along with her promotion, Geeta obtained her license to operate a water plant. Her husband Jaya told the Ledger, quote, "It was a very exciting time for her. The ozone technology was just coming up at the time, and she was taking the initiative in implementing it. She was very happy." That same year, Law & Order Special Victims Unit released an episode filmed at the treatment plant where a male college student was found floating in a tank due to hazing. That detail makes what happened the following year even more eerie. On the morning of February 8, 2005, 43-year-old Geeta went to work like normal. At approximately 10:15 a.m., she left her lab, briefly stopped at another lab, and then headed to the plant's basement to calibrate monitoring equipment and collect water samples from hoses along the wall, a task she conducted countless times. She was carrying a clipboard, a glass beaker, and a two-way radio. After that, she was never seen again. She failed to show up to take her daughter to a basketball game at 6 p.m., which was unusual for her. Family members called her cell phone, but she didn't answer. At first, the family thought that maybe a project was keeping her late, and she just didn't have the ability to contact them. But as the hours passed, they began to realize that something wasn't right. At 9:20 p.m., a plant manager actually called Jaya and said that workers had seen Geeta's car in the employee parking lot. And that's when Jaya had to explain to them that she hadn't made it home yet. The BBC reported that security then went to her desk and found her coat, purse, and phone still there. At that point, it was clear that Geeta was missing. So three employees who had already left for the day returned to the plant to search for her. During the search, they made their way down to the basement, which was made up of two passages or tunnels, however you want to describe them, and each passage was about 8 feet wide. Under these passages are these massive water tanks that are 40 feet deep by 100 feet wide, holding 9 million gallons of purified water. The tanks were connected by 5-foot pipes, and the only way in or out was through these rectangular 4-foot metal access panels that were set on the concrete floor, each weighing 50 pounds. According to the New York Times, this panel or grate had no handle on it and was secured by 12 screws, and a tool was necessary if you wanted to lift it. Now, if you're watching on YouTube, you can see on the screen right now, I have an image from one of these passages. I think it's kind of what you would expect as I'm describing it. There's not much to dissect here. You can see the width and the height, and you can see the pipes on the wall, and it's what I visualized before I actually looked it up. Now, I do want to say that I spent a lot of time, and so didn't Haley, trying to find a picture of this panel and or grate. And I keep going back between panel and or grate because, frankly, I don't know what it is. What I visualize is some type of grate where you would have the ability to collect a water sample without having to remove this thing, because as I mentioned, it was 50 pounds. It's secured by 12 screws and you need some type of tool to lift it. So that wouldn't be very practical if you're doing these tests all the time. But I have to go back and forth because I've seen numerous documents and different stories where they describe it specifically as a panel. So to cover myself, I'm going to stick with panel, but understand I haven't seen a picture of it. So it could in fact be a grate, which is how it was described in this New York Times article. According to the Ledger, an employee searched one of the passages and they discovered a broken glass on the floor next to an access panel, which was slightly askew. The employee swept up the shards of glass, threw them away, and continued searching. By 11:20 p.m., the employee still hadn't found Gita, so they called the police, and at that point, no one had seen or heard from her in about 13 hours. Officers arrived and began interviewing employees. After hearing about the broken glass in the panel, they went to that area thinking that Gita may have fallen through the opening into one of the tanks. When they got there, they realized that the opening wasn't large enough. The panel was nearly closed, and there was no way she could have fit through on her own. At that same time, it was also noted that the panel's 12 screws were missing or broken. The 50-pound panel was then fully removed so officers could look into the tank. The water was about 5 feet below the opening, and there was no ladder for them to hold on to. Looking into these tanks was like looking into the pitch black. They couldn't see if anyone or anything was inside. Because of that, the decision was made to drain the tank. Residents in the area were told to boil their water, while nearly a million gallons were pumped out, leaving only a few feet at the bottom. Divers were sent in to search the 36-degree water, and during the search, they found the rest of Gita's beaker, along with her clipboard and her radio. But Gita was not with those items. So the divers began searching the other tanks. After many hours of searching, they eventually found her. Her body had moved from one tank into another. Right away, there were more signs that she had not fallen in on her own. There were deep bruises around her neck, and at that point, the passageway was treated as a crime scene. But from the beginning, there were major problems. We're going to talk about them right after the break. I'm excited to tell you about the world's number one expanding garden hose and their new product, the Pocket Hose Ballistic. I've talked to you guys about the pocket hose before. Last week, I was discussing how I beat on the hoses at my house. I drag them all over the place, through bushes, around sharp corners on the stairs, and they usually do not last long. And the pocket hose is able to handle it all. I've put it through the ringer. In fact, they sent me a hose to try. It was the 25-foot hose. The only complaint was it wasn't long enough. So I actually used my code and I bought another one. And my only complaint there was that the 100-foot hose was out of stock. So I bought the 75-foot hose. I just got it in yesterday. Exact same quality. It's incredible. And now I have the length that I need. And what I love about the pocket hose is the technology behind it. It does really everything. And what's really cool about it is it has this liquid crystal polymer inside of it, which is the same material used in bulletproof vests. So obviously coming from my background, you know, that's what I like to hear. It's super lightweight. It's easy to manage, easy to store. You turn the water on and it grows. You turn the water off and it shrinks back down to pocket size. Can't beat it. Plus, it comes with the pocket pivot, which gives you total freedom of movement at the spigot with 360-degree rotation. So you move and it moves with you. And like I was saying earlier, this thing really is over-engineered. It has over 100 patents worldwide. I'm talking about a garden hose here. 100 patents. So you can tell the type of technology and the thought that's gone into this thing. There are certain products that cross my desk and I absolutely fall in love with them. The pocket hose is definitely one of them. And now for a limited time, when you purchase a new pocket hose ballistic, you'll get a free 360-degree rotating pocket pivot and a free thumb drive nozzle. Just text DETECTIVE to 64,000. That's DETECTIVE to 64,000 for your two free gifts with your purchase. One more time, text DETECTIVE to 64,000. Message and data rates may apply. All right, we're back, and an important note to make is that Gita had been in corrosive chlorine for more than a day, which meant no physical evidence was left behind. And the scene had already been contaminated by the employees who searched for her and cleaned up the glass, a as well as the officers and divers who entered during the search as well. And as I mentioned, the broken pieces of glass beaker Gita had been holding were recovered, but because they had been contaminated, they couldn't be used, according to law enforcement. And I might be missing a piece of this here, because I do feel like law enforcement did the best they could, but with glass especially, sometimes you can get good DNA results or fingerprints. And I know that the glass recovered from the water tank, that's probably useless, but if they were able to recover the glass shards that were swept up by an employee, maybe they were in a trash can nearby, that would be something worth examining. You're going to expect to find Gita's DNA, but the question would be, what other DNA or fingerprints do you find on that glass? And then if you do, who do they belong to, and do they have a reasonable explanation for their DNA or fingerprints being on that glass? Now, I'm going to assume that this was all done, and unfortunately, for whatever reason, whether the condition it was in, where it was dumped into a trash can, that is what contaminated it. And maybe by examining it, that's what they determined. If you see what I'm saying here, they didn't just assume it was contaminated. When they tried to analyze it through a forensic process, that's when they realized that they weren't able to recover anything. Gita's body was also transported for autopsy, where additional bruising was found on her waist and one of her elbows. Those injuries suggested that she struggled as someone grabbed her, and according to the police, this is their exact words, quote, then throttled her into unconsciousness with their bare hands. Now, the area around the passageway is often loud due to machinery, so investigators concluded that more than likely the attack wouldn't have been heard by anyone. But here's the interesting thing. The strangulation wasn't what killed her. According to the New York Times, Gita drowned, which suggested that she was still alive when she entered the water. Investigators developed a theory that she was attacked while in the passageway, which would explain the broken glass found on the floor. They believe the attacker then pushed her through the access panel and replaced it haphazardly in a rush. It was unclear whether the panel had been opened before the attack. One possibility was that Gita came across the attacker while the panel was open and then confronted them, which led to the attack. And I will say, just a hint, this is part of that out-of-the-box theory that I'm going to discuss with you guys later. Another possibility was that the panel had been closed and the attacker pried it open after subduing Gita. Either way, her death was ruled a homicide. And for anybody who may be wondering, because I know it comes up a lot when we have cases like this, there were no signs that Gita had been sexually assaulted. So as the homicide investigation began, investigators from the county prosecutor's office took over the case. One of their first priorities was understanding the facility's security measures. They learned that the facility was surrounded by a 10-foot fence, and the perimeter was monitored by cameras and motion detectors. Guards, sheriff's officers, and police officers patrolled the 35-acre compound on foot and in patrol vehicles. There was only one way in and one way out of the property, and that was a driveway with a staffed security post where all entrants had to be checked in. That area was monitored by camera, but once someone cleared, they could move freely throughout the complex. So yes, there was basically Fort Knox on the outside to get into the facility. But what's important here is that once you made it past that checkpoint, you could really go wherever you want. So inside the water plant, there were no doors requiring key cards and no indoor video capturing their movements. That meant any employee could have been in the basement passageway with Gita, and there was no way to visually confirm who had been there. Another fact that I wanted to mention was that there was also a sensor in the tank that should have detected an anomaly in the water, but it wasn't working. Understandably, Gita's family found that detail suspicious, but investigators later told the New York Times that the sensor had not been tampered with. However, this too will be part of my theory at the end of the episode. Based on what investigators knew at this point, it seemed likely an employee was involved in Gita's murder. While it was technically possible an outsider could have been responsible, investigators did not believe that was likely, and I have to agree. And because of this belief, investigators spoke with Gita's husband, Jaya, to learn more about her work environment. He said that while she was excited about her promotion, some employees were resentful of her and disagreed with the decision to switch to the ozone cleaning process. The week before she was killed, Gita had been out sick, and during that time, the plant experienced a slight pink discoloration in the water that may have been linked to the ozone system. The issue was corrected, but not according to protocol. When Geeta returned, she was asked to retrain staff on how to handle similar problems. Jaya said this created tension, and he described the atmosphere at the plant as very hostile. He also said that Geeta had begun applying for another license, which only increased resentment among coworkers who already disliked her. Investigators believed that they were on the right track, so they focused more closely on the workplace. They learned that 85 people were employed at the facility, and 50 of them were working on the morning Geeta went missing. All employees were interviewed, and DNA samples were collected from those present that day. During those interviews, not a single person spoke negatively about Geeta. Investigators did learn that an employee had seen the broken beaker glass during the day on the 8th and even reported it to a supervisor, but no action was taken. No one cleaned it up or even tried to figure out if it was Geeta's. And that wouldn't have been difficult, as she had a radio. And on that same note, investigators and Geeta's family wondered how she was able to go missing for such a long period of time before anyone went looking. It's not like she went missing at lunch or near the end of a shift. She went missing at 10:15 a.m. and no one said anything to security until nearly 12 hours later. The Lead County prosecutor told the Record, quote, "No one seemed to be too troubled that she hadn't been seen during that period of time. If she's truly this tremendously valuable asset at Passaic Valley, surely someone would have noticed she was missing." I understand where the prosecutor is coming from. I tend to agree with them. You would think, in theory, that if someone goes missing for 12 hours, you would notice and you would say, "Hey, where's so-and-so?" And I know that in my police department, that was made up of 50 people and was a rather small building, and we interacted a lot with each other. I would have to imagine that would have happened. "Hey, where's so-and-so? I just saw him like 20 minutes ago. Haven't seen him since. They were supposed to come over here." But I don't know the specifics of this work facility and how much people interacted with each other. How many people were in the group where Geeta was working that would have been aware that she was gone for that period of time? It is possible that due to how they functioned and the amount of people that she interacted with on a normal basis, maybe it could have slipped through the cracks. Because she was a person in a position of authority, maybe it was normal for her to go off and do other things on her own, and she would always come back eventually. Maybe she had administrative duties where if she disappeared for a few hours, it wasn't a big deal. And then at that point, that person who was with her or should have seen her, they may go off and do something else. They may have other responsibilities. So although it seems unlikely and it's absolutely warranted in questioning it, I do think if we're being reasonable about it, it is possible that the people who weren't involved with whatever happened to her may just not have noticed. They weren't thinking something like this was going to happen. So do I think it's possible that a bunch of unsuspecting people who didn't know that this was about to occur may have missed the fact that Geeta wasn't around if they didn't have direct involvement with her? Yeah, it's absolutely possible. If you've listened to an episode before, then more than likely you've heard me talk about Hungry Root because I absolutely love it. It truly simplifies my life as a busy parent and someone who works a lot of hours. It really has been a game changer for me when it comes to reaching my health goals by doing all the weekly food shopping with Hungry Root. So for me, the hardest part is consistency. I have a hard time sticking to a plan, getting up, cooking my food, going grocery shopping, and it's mostly because there are the things that become a priority, whether it's the kids or work. My health always takes a backseat and it shouldn't. But Hungry Root plans all of my meals and groceries for the week, fills my cart, and delivers everything I'll need so I can eat healthy every day, all while fitting my health goals, dietary preferences, and my budget. I had Hungry Root for lunch this afternoon, and I went back to one of my favorites, which is the zesty pulled chicken stuffed peppers. I paired that up with a sweet potato. I love the sweet potato that comes. You can put it right in the microwave. There's really no cooking involved. I did cheat a little bit. I'm going to be honest. I love their croissants. I did have half a croissant, and I topped it off with just a couple couple scoops of chickpea cookie dough. Again, my whole thought behind it is, yes, I want to eat healthy. I want to eat clean, but I also want to enjoy what I'm eating, and I'm not going to starve myself. And Hungry Root allows me to do that. And unlike other food delivery companies, Hungry Root now has over 50,000 chef-crafted recipes to choose from every week, with many ready in 15 minutes or less. And with over 1,000 grocery items like smoothies, sweets, kid snacks, salad kits, ready-to-eat meals, and supplements, it's insanely easy to find options that fits everyone's taste and nutrition goals. And Hungry Root holds all of its food to high standards, screening out over 200 additives, including high fructose corn syrup, artificial sweeteners, and preservatives. They source only high quality meat and seafood with no hormones or antibiotics, or for organic produce and non-GMO options, and carry trusted healthy brands like Oatly, Vital Farms, Ithaca Hummus, Harmless Harvest, and many more. I absolutely love Hungry Root and what it has done for my life, and I think you will love it just as much. For a limited time, you can get 40% off your first box plus a free item in every box for life. All you have to do is go to hungryroot.com/detective and use my code detective. That's hungryroot.com/detective, code detective, for 40% off your first box and a free item of your choice for life. And I know I mentioned a few minutes ago that everyone had been interviewed. And while investigators said that no one had a bad word to say about Geeta, some co-workers told the media that there had been jealousy toward her. Multiple people said they may have resented her because she had a PhD and also her level of expertise. One person also said there was, quote, some racial prejudice. 98% of the plant is white, and not all of them like seeing immigrants do well. So, investigators continued digging into her background and her workplace relationships. They found no evidence that Geeta had hiring or firing authority, no indication she was a whistleblower, and no signs of a workplace affair. They also didn't think the Law and Order episode was related. Their working theory was that Geeta's murder may have been the result of professional jealousy or a workplace conflict. They also believed her death was spur of the moment and not pre-planned. What's fascinating here, because we don't see it often in open investigations, was the fact that investigators told the media they were actually focusing on 8 male co-workers saying that their stories weren't convincing and that there were some gaps in their accounts. And this was really interesting because, although I like the transparency, these 8 employees who are, I guess, persons of interest, also have access to the same media. So if they are somehow involved, now they know it. But putting that aside, I do agree with the approach. I also want to note that investigators did look at alternate angles outside of the workplace in Geeta's personal life, and they didn't find anything. And couple that with the security at this facility, that's how they narrowed it down to the employees. And then when you think about it being 8 male employees, I also agree with that as well. When you think about what occurred here, and it appears that Geeta was overcame by someone who was stronger than her, relatively easy, because it doesn't seem like there was much of a struggle. None of the employees had any injuries to them, as far as we know. I would lean towards a male suspect. And so I understand where they're going here. And if people's stories don't line up, yeah, you would want to focus on them. So I do agree with the approach of who they were looking at. I don't know necessarily if I would have disclosed that information to the public. The investigation continued, and investigators narrowed their suspect pool from 8 down to 3 employees. Very few details about those employees has ever been released, and no names have been made public. However, according to the New York Times, one was a supervisor, another worked directly with Geeta, knew she had planned to go to the basement, and reported finding pieces of the beaker to his supervisor the day she disappeared. All 3 were asked to take polygraph tests. One passed, one refused, and the results for the 3rd were inconclusive. And allegedly, investigators were told by other employees that one suspect was ready to confess, but then requested a lawyer. After that, the investigation reached a standstill, and within a few months of Geeta's murder, the case was no longer being worked full-time. There were no updates until the 1-year mark, when the lead prosecutor explained why the case was still unsolved. He said, quote, absent a motive, absent any evidence, absent any witness, it is a very, very difficult case to solve, unless there is some new bit of information or evidence that comes to light. We have exhausted every possible way we can go on this case. And I get it. I quote the great Denzel Washington from Training Day all the time. It's not what you know, it's what you can prove. That's why we have due process. Yes, it is important to catch those responsible. It's also important to exonerate the innocent. And so you can't charge someone based on a hunch. We have to make sure that we get the right person, not just a person. So if you're not absolutely 100% sure, based on evidence, that you have the right guy, you do not have the ability to press charges against them. And even if you did, you shouldn't. Frustrated by the lack of progress, Geeta's family pushed for the Attorney General's office to take over the investigation and enlisted the help of legislators. The state attorney general and the state police agreed to review the case in 2007, and you would think that was a great thing. But according to what we've learned, they did not reinvestigate every aspect, and the review did not lead to any new answers. A year later, there was a pretty big curveball. The former lead investigator for the prosecutor's office, his name was Lieutenant James Wood, he told the media that he had come to believe that Geeta's death, while tragic, was an accident. He pointed to findings from a Scottish pathologist who said that in a small number of cold water drownings, bruising around the neck can resemble injuries seen in strangulations. That information, along with Wood's belief that his investigators would have secured a confession from the suspect if there was one, led him to say publicly, quote, "There's absolutely no question in my mind that her death was an accident." Wood said that he believed another employee may have left the access panel open after collecting water samples, and he believed that Geeta, who would have been carrying a clipboard and a beaker through the passageway, may not have noticed that it was open. He also believes that the person responsible for removing this panel may have closed it in a panic after realizing that Geeta was missing. He said, quote, "I don't think anyone will ever admit to taking that plate off or putting it back on because they know they're going to be held liable for it." The current county prosecutor disagreed and said that Wood's opinion does not change the ruling that Geeta's death was a homicide. He noted that 5 pathologists reviewed the autopsy report and all concluded it was a homicide. 5 doctors. That's pretty significant, and I think that's pretty compelling. And the prosecutor, he didn't stop there. He said he would rely on those findings, explaining, quote, "I still rely on the opinion of the medical examiner who did the autopsy, as opposed to the opinion of an individual who lives in Scotland." He also noted that the Scottish individual had not examined Geeta's body. Damn. I mean, facts are facts, right? You gotta agree with it. I understand the opinion of the Scottish pathologist, the person who had done some drownings in the past and had these findings. I'm not even doubting them. But there's no substitute for actually doing the examination yourself. And you guys know that I have some, how do I say this, reservations about pathologists, because although what they do is a science, their opinion of that science is subjective. But in this case, when you have 5 different pathologists all coming to the same conclusion, that's good enough for me. And just to add on to that, Geeta's family was very upset with Wood's statements, and you can understand why. They believe that their loved one was murdered, and someone who was part of the investigation, who has some weight behind their words because they worked the case, is coming out publicly and saying this was an accident, which could deter people from wanting to look into it in the future. And Geeta's family said right out that Geeta was very intelligent, as we all know at this point, but she was also a very cautious woman, and she would have seen this huge hole in the ground. And I'm not going to dispute them. I'm not here to upset anyone any further. But I will say there are smart and cautious people who can still have an accident, right? It doesn't make you immune to making a mistake. And I think anyone is susceptible to having something occur when they don't expect it. That's why they call it an accident. Let's fast forward to 2015. 10 years had passed and Geeta's case had gone cold. Her family again worked with legislators to push for another review by the Attorney General's office, but nothing came from that effort. Unfortunately, since then, there's been very little attention on Geeta's case. Her death remains unsolved, and investigators are still trying to identify her killer. All right, so let's dive into this perspective, and I want to start with the accident versus homicide question, because like I was saying in the episode, Woods coming out and saying this was not good for anyone, not good for Geeta's family, but also not good for the case itself, because like I said, it deters people from wanting to pursue it further because they're looking at it from the outside saying, hey, this is a guy who worked the case and he thinks it was an accident. What are we doing here? There are other cases we could focus on. So I want to address that first. On one hand, I love the idea that you have investigators thinking outside the box, looking at articles and literature from outside the country that may address their specific case. That shows someone doing the research. On the other hand, there's a lot of evidence here that contradicts the idea that this was an accident. You have broken or missing screws on a panel that would have been seen by a lot of people, including Geeta, who was by the book and very aware of her surroundings and would have addressed this. Someone would have addressed this. This is a security hazard. It's a safety issue. It would have been handled and it would have been, at minimum, it would have been documented. That's number one. Number two, you have Geeta's body being found in one tank and her belongings being found in the other. Now, some may say, oh, maybe her body went through this 5-foot pipe. What are we talking about here? First, you have this small gap in this panel that's basically all the way over, and physically she couldn't have slid through it. So that suggests that somebody put the panel back on after she was in the tank. But on top of that, her body is found in one tank and her belongings are found in the other. I think to me that clearly indicates that someone physically carried this behavior out. This wasn't done just through a natural occurrence of events. Someone deliberately did this to her and her belongings. And if that's not enough for you, then you have the pathology reports. You have the person who physically conducted the autopsy saying that this was an assault and a homicide. And then you have four additional pathologists looking at the report and coming to the same conclusion. So for me, I'm not the smartest guy in the world. I'm going to go with the professionals and the abundance of evidence. And I believe this was a homicide. That leads us to the question, what happened and why? And I know in the episode I said that investigators found no sign of an affair or jealousy or resentment, but we know it existed. And even if there was no overwhelming signs of it, it doesn't mean it wasn't there. For example, and I don't believe this happened, I'm going to say it right now, mark it, clip it. There was no affair. But if there was one, and Geeta being a smart woman, maybe she would have conducted herself in a way where there would be no evidence of it. That's the whole point of the affair, to keep it a secret. And maybe there's a chance that she was better at it than others. Now, again, just to bookmark this, I don't think that's what happened. But if something was occurring, resentment, jealousy, somebody had a vendetta, they may have taken measures to avoid it being detected. That would be the whole point of doing it, right? To kill her and then get away with it without it coming back on you. So again, just to reiterate, just because there's no signs of it doesn't mean it didn't happen. There could be an angle here where there was some jealousy, some resentment, and because she was in a position of authority, maybe she goes downstairs and she calls someone out or identifies an issue or reprimands someone because of the condition of this panel slash grate, and there's an argument that ensues. Maybe this person loses their cool, there's an assault, they realize what they just did and the consequences of their actions, and in a panic and a desperate attempt at self-preservation, they decide to make things even worse by removing any evidence of said assault, which included dumping Geeta's body into one of the water tanks. And that is the most likely scenario here, right? Whenever you have a hierarchy within an establishment, and it happens everywhere, including the police department, and you just have someone who's a rock star, someone who's just on a rocket ship, and they're just jumping people every single year, people who've maybe even been there longer than her, there can be resentment. And not everyone is a sane person, right? Not everyone is rational and commonsensical. There could be someone in there who had some underlying mental health issues and was struggling with Geeta's ascension much more than the average person. And maybe it wasn't pre-planned, but this was a ticking time bomb. And whatever happened down in that passageway put them over the edge. However, in the spirit of thinking outside the box, I want to throw out a crazy theory. And maybe after I explain it, you won't think it's that crazy. You can let me know. Think about the establishment that we're talking about here. This is a water treatment facility that's providing purified water to over 800,000 residents. You know what's a huge fear of mine? Terrorist attacks. It's my understanding that just basically a small vial of ricin could be dumped into our water system and kill tens of thousands of people instantly, right? Without them even knowing what's occurring just by drinking the water. This facility is almost more secure than some prisons. And that's the reason for it. It's the service they're providing, drinking water for the community. So if you're a sleeper cell and you're a terrorist and you've ingratiated yourself within this company and you've been there for a while, you would need to get down to those passageways. Is it possible that maybe that's the explanation behind the broken sensor? Is it possible that's the explanation behind the broken or missing screws on this panel? Is it possible that while Gita was down there doing her testing, she saw something that she shouldn't have? She walked in on something that was much bigger than we even know. Did she foil a potential terrorist attack where someone was down there about to do something pretty significant that was going to affect a lot of people? And because Gita was who she was, did she confront this person? And because of how intelligent she was, she quickly realized that something was seriously wrong. And because this person knew the significance of what Gita had just witnessed and the consequences that would undoubtedly come from it, they assaulted her and disposed of any evidence, trying to remove the possibility of being detected. And I know this is a wild theory, and there is no evidence to support it. But as I just mentioned a few moments ago, there's also no evidence to support a motive for any of these other theories. That's why I'm sitting here right now. So I would love anyone to come forward who's worked this case. I challenge them to come forward and tell me this isn't a possibility as well. And by no means am I hoping this is what happened. But I think it's important to mention because not only was Gita an amazing person, but she may have also been a hero. And that's where I stand on the theories. Again, just to reiterate, because I don't want anybody going crazy. I don't want anybody posting this, that there was a terrorist attack in New Jersey. I don't believe that's what happened here. I don't think that's what we're looking at. I'm throwing it out there because as I was reading the information and looking through the research, just like any one of you could do, I said to myself, man, we've heard about this before where there's potential soft targets that are easy to get to, like our water treatment facilities. And we don't often have murders there. So to have this happen in such a secure facility where the suspect would have to know that there's going to be a small pool of people being looked at for this, this is a huge risk. So to me, this murder was almost a necessity to stop something bigger, potentially. That's the only reason I bring it up. But that doesn't mean it's not something more trivial, like a coworker dispute, just a rage of jealousy. More than likely, that is what we're looking at here. But I like to explore all options. So what do we do? Where do we go from here? For me, I really want to focus on that 10:15 a.m. window of time. It is my belief that whatever happened to Gita happened within a 10 to 15 minute period after her leaving that secondary lab and going down to the basement. So let's say it's 10:30, right? Where we established that she went down to the basement. So we're looking at a 10:30 to 10:50, 11 a.m. window. I'm going to all 50 employees that were there that day, and I'm asking them to identify every person they saw during that window. And as I go through it, I'm going to create this colored chart that's going to be circles. And what's going to happen is these colored circles are going to become essentially Venn diagrams where multiple people are going to see other people, and they're all going to be accounted for, hopefully multiple times. And you're going to have this colored chart of all these bubbles. And then there's going to be some dark areas. There's going to be some shadows. And those shadows are going to contain the people who are unaccounted for, who during that window of time, nobody can verify their alibi. Maybe that's how they got to these 8 suspects, because they did something similar. And then you start to grill down on them like they did. Interrogations, polygraphs, they seem like they did all of it. And what I'm describing here may be exactly what they did. But again, without actual proof, there's still not much you can do. But I would also explore the possibility that these 3 individuals that they narrowed this whole thing down to may have some history in their past that might not be documented, which would require you to go speak to family members and friends. Do they have a predisposition to violence that maybe wasn't reported? This is something you'd want to look into. It would also be worth looking back into this case now, because you can look at these 3 or 8 individuals and see if anything's happened since. What has their lives been like up to this point? Have there been any other acts of violence that have been reported to law enforcement or by friends or family? These are all things that take time and manpower, but need to be done. Also, on the whole terrorist side of things, I would want to look at these people and see if they had taken any trips to parts of the world where it is known to harbor terrorist organizations. Again, more than likely, it's going to come back as a nothing burger, but you won't know until you look into it. And then finally, as always, maybe there's people who worked at the facility or were friends and family members of people who worked at the facility who heard something or saw something that was significant, but didn't feel like they could report it at the time. 20 plus years now, it's not too late to do the right thing. You can remain anonymous. Come forward, give Geeta's family the closure they deserve. So just to recap, 43-year-old Dr. Geeta Angara went to work on the morning of February 8th, 2005 in the Passaic Valley Water Commission in Totowa, New Jersey, and was never seen again after heading to the facility's basement passageway. Her body was later found in one of the plant's water tanks after an extensive search, and her autopsy showed she had been assaulted and then drowned. Her death was ruled a homicide. If you have any information that could help solve Geeta's case, you can call the Passaic County Prosecutor's Office at 1-877-370-PCPO or email tips@passaiccountynj.org. As always, my final words go out to the friends and family of Geeta, specifically her husband Jaya and their 3 children. I can't imagine how frustrating it is after 20 plus years to still not know what happened to her when it appears that this case would be very solvable, right? We have a small suspect pool. This was a confined, controlled area. And unlike most of the cases I cover, it is not an abundant pool. There is a select few individuals who could be responsible for this, and yet we still don't have answers. And I know you've had some hurdles where you've reached out to legislators to try to get the Attorney General's office to take another look at Geeta's case, and you haven't been successful. I'm not a miracle worker, but I'm hoping by covering the case here, along with my community, what we do here and how passionate we are about these cases, that that public pressure, if it gets to the right people, maybe that is what will get this over the hump and allow a fresh set of eyes to take a look at this and see what they can find. And if that happens, I hope you get an investigator who comes in with a fresh, open perspective and can finally crack this case open and give you the answers you deserve. Until that day comes, everyone stay safe out there. I'll see you soon.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place. With coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
No, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.